tattoos in general. And he said, we can't give you a big nourishing meal yet, because it would probably make you all very ill. But later, we'll bring you a nice hot stew and some more baps. Baps, what's that? One lad said. Little tubs, you know, quite fresh bread, he said. This is how it was, just at that particular time. And he said, oh, this fella, you know, and they said anyway that they'd be back to it later. But as the chap reached the door, I shouted, hang on. He came back. He was a CQMS as well, by the way. That was on his children's on his head. Now, what is it, he said? Well, that's before him a picture. We've had enough surprises to last a damn lifetime. Well, come on. What's that mean? So, he said, well, this is it, he says. Gather round, lads, he said. No, listen. He said, we're now in Odessa, as you know. Did you? Well, this is it, Odessa. And, it's a port on the Black Sea, do you know that? I said, well, we're not bloody stupid, like, you know. He said, well, he was a member of the British Commission. So I said, right. Anyway, he said, we've been sent specially by the British government and the Allies at the request of the Russians to help with the evacuation of Allied ex-prisoners of war from their shores. That is the Russian shore. The Duchess of Bedford, which is an ocean-going liner from Liverpool, is waiting in the harbour to take us all back to Europe. He said, war was still on, and the ship is unescorted. That means to say it's not in convoy or anything like that. But there's armaments on board, and they're sufficient to withstand any attack at sea. We've also got medical attention waiting for you on board. But he said, I'll leave it to that amongst yourselves now. And off he went. Now, later that day, each man, each Britisher anyway, as I know of, were thoroughly in. What's the word? Interrogated. I couldn't say that, I'm sorry. Yeah, I still have that. It's not a slight one, anyway. And I had then got that bit of a stutter. Just stirred him up to me, so I don't know why, but he did. And it was therefore difficult for me to answer these questions in front of these strange fellas like, and so I asked for a paper and pencil, and every time they asked me a question, I put it down, put the answer down on paper, and I wrote it in English, you see, and so that seemed to satisfy them that I was British, and I was an ex-prisoner of war, So, as we left the office, we were handed a square card, you know, and we're told, don't part with that, Mike, and always keep it with you while you're in Russia. I thought to myself, well, yeah, we're going to stop a long while, and what? Anyway, the Russians decided that we could go and look around the town a bit, spend an hour or two, you know. So, he police cards seemingly were permits to be shown to any Russian official who asked for them on request, man, yeah. And we felt a little bit lighter then, and we got that over with, and we were clean and properly clothed and fed. So we stepped out of this here rail yard in groups of four and five, you know, didn't matter who you went with, because we were comrades, but not all your personal bosom pals, we were just, you know, comrades. So as we left the rail yard, we entered what can only be described as how can I put it now, a very quiet, disaster area, put it that way, that's better, isn't it, a semi-disaster area that had been abandoned. There were like sets in the road, you could, you know, on the road surface, like, in other words, it was made of sets, and there were two lines of rails running off into the distance. I don't know, we'll get along the road, that's all, I don't know. Anyway, I noticed it was dilapidated, all right. It did not the blazes. Lamp posts were, well, shall we say, periodically placed here and there. And they were leaning on the nearest object available, of course. It might be part of a crumbling wall or burnout shop front. Might be a tram shelter. There they were, leaning like blazes on the you know, where the road had been sheltered a bit by the bushes, in other words, the ground, you know, from the recent light fall of snow. Well, it suggested to us there must have been some very heavy machinery or vehicles that passed by there. My God, there are cracks all over the place. But, no matter. We strolled on for a few hundred yards and we turned into an opening, and on a big square there were stalls set up with people milling around, and as we neared, one or two of the crowd looked up at us. Their wrinkled faces squinted at us. They had that look of uncertainty about it, you know. Anyway, one of the Russian swaddy approached us, and we smiled at him. One of our lads showed him his card. So he read it back, and he said the magic word, Tavarich, Anglicana, Doc. He smiled, and he spoke to one or two of the people who were looking at us. Half open mouths. Anyway, it got them clapping, and others joined in. And after a bit, the whole Free Market Square people clapping away. So we were embarrassed, you know. We joined in clapping, and then they started hugging and kissing us on both cheeks, you know, and patting us on the back. And, you know, it was going a bit. I think out of hand in a way, but however, some more of our ilk joined us, and then things really got back to normal. And we wandered around the stables, you know, looking, and there were the and all this crap. And there weren't much to see, really. For instance, one stall had a few loads of flat, round dark bread and shit, like bloody wheels, to me. About 14 inches across, in Bayonne, you know, and another had baskets made from the willow tree, you know. I don't know, footwear or clothes store, or a Camden sweet store, no toy store, or fancy goods. Just wanted to pot some pans, a few ready-made wooden soles for clogs, and that kind of tackle, you know. And there were a drink stall, but what sort of a drink it was, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't smell it, and I couldn't tell you what it was. I know steam rising from the larger and on this thing, on this sort of, it was like a brazier they had going. Now, most of the people were clad in drab type clothing, women with swords on their heads, and the only shades or colours we could see were, as I can remember rightly, they were just browns and blacks and greys and nothing else, no reds and blues and greens and yellows and the bars, just, you know, they looked so depressing. There were one or two Russian soldiers along with mingling, I suppose they were there taking a bit of leave, you know, on past life, but we had a small scare, of course, one which, I'll tell you about, it was rather amusing really. One of our lads got too close to one of the bread stores, you see. Now, there's women around this store. The oldest Irish Welsh woman type, as I said. And, one of the women offered this lad some bread, like, you know. A whole loaf of bread. Big round wheel type loaf of bread. And he smiled and pointed to his trousers. She said something else to the woman, and we all nodded like her. This lad nodded, I said, "You devil." Next thing he said, yeah, he said, that's what we said. Now, he took his bread and he said he was going to get for like favour of some description, you know. And then he takes a piece off with his hands, tried it. Next thing, he was on the stone when he was being debagged. I'm not kidding you, he got his losses for his trousers, I'm telling you. It seemed like they were bartering for his trousers, but he didn't realise that, you know. Anyway, he didn't get them back. He'd be lazy. And when he went back to the rail yard, even the Russians were laughing, I understand. Well, he did keep his bread like. He got another pair of trousers, all right. But how he explained his embarrassment, I'll never know. As we left the market, we walked down a couple of side roads, just past, like, you know, and saw one or two women brickies, and they were building up a house wall. Others were, I haven't seen it, mending tram tracks, and there were some sweeping all in all, and a gang of them there, they'd just been putting some windows in a house, and as we walked past, you know, blokes whistle after women, the women whistle after the blokes in that particular, they were whistling after them, you know, and anyway, we suddenly turned around another corner, and lo and behold, what a transformation. We were in like a cul-de-sac. All round, the lovely small garden houses, spick and span, curtains up at windows, like small squared windows they were, and They were painted up smart and all, but they'd just been done out, I don't know, but my word, they did look great. Everything nice and clean. They were, you know, they were right red and blue painted, these eight houses. And it started getting dark, and in the growing twilight, put it that way, we could even just about, you know, the smoke rising steadily and lazily from chimneys. Now, to me, the place looked as if it didn't belong there somehow. It seemed so out of place to the rest of the surroundings. Anyway, I glanced up and down. We traced our steps back through the open space that served as a market, and we noticed the peasants there were all, they seemed to be packing up, ready for going home, you know, kind of thing, and getting everything packed up and going. Darkness was falling, but the light wasn't all that apparent because the snow had covered everything, so, you know, wasn't too bad. We got back to the shed in this here railway yard, because that's all it really was like, and sure enough, there was the hot meal of stew that had just arrived as promised, in containers, and first of all, also, hello, it'll be McConaughey's, you know, tinned stuff like we used to get, but not a bit of it. It was good homemade thick stew, and it was great, and all better meat in it. We had some white cups of fresh bread again to go with it, and there were plenty. So we said, what's French having like, you know? Said, oh, they requested onion soup. So we gave them onion soup. And I thought to myself, that is again Eric soup. But well, no mind that. We're not bothered about it. We were told to get some sleep and get ready to board the next day. I thought, this is great. Well, you see, this feeling sent. Well, I'm saying the feeling, it was a feeling, put it that way. It was a feeling of elation. There's no doubt about that. And I think we all felt it. Then, after our meal, we collected the plates and the spoons and put them in baskets and took the containers down. And there were a couple of sergeants coming. There didn't seem to be any corporals or privates or anybody like that. Just sergeants and upwards to me, never mind. We talked excited amongst ourselves, you know, as two lads we were, I'm sure. Eventually, we kicked, you know, and so on. Well, following morning, we got some breakfast. What the hell was that? Damn if I can remember that. You see, they were so excited about getting on board ship and getting out of it. None of us even had a wash. Well, there was nothing. There was no real great facilities for washing, just a cow tap. So, well, you know, we never bothered. In any case, it was cold outside, so we were just hung about there waiting for coal to assemble outside. You know, to go to the docks to get on board. Eventually, the coal came. So, we thought, right, we formed up as befitted the army this time, and we marched off smartly. But our armed escort, the Russian escort, was also very proud to manage with two in front and one behind. And then after us, we looked back. There was the French coming along in jibs and jabs, smoking and chatting. And just as we got to dock gates, they were counted, and then marching on the quay to the bloody great big liner berth opposite the bombed warehouse. On the quayside were four British and four Russian officers. They were sat at trusty tables. I couldn't remember that already. We were halted and kept in line there, you see. Then, as each of our names were called, which was very slow, we were checked off by the Russians and handed over to the British. They rejected us and allowed us to walk to the gangway to freedom. What a feeling. At the top of the gangway stood a burly seaman. He shook her hand and said, "Welcome aboard. It's good to see you." Then we were ushered to a lower deck. This is where we all assembled there, like, you know, where the colonel and the captain of the ship came and welcomed us. Then, without much more to do, they put us in the picture. We were to help with the ship's armaments and patrol the decks. We could sleep in the hammocks or on the deck itself, but not in the open. We would have boat bill every day, once a day, and there were four nurses attached to the sick bay on a hire deck. And they were very strictly out of bounds to all ranks. Then we were given £5 in English money. Left 2 pairs of tablets, 100 cigarettes. Then we were told again that we'd be interrogated again. Once the ship was underway, of course, that was, and we received more new clothes as well, and a pair of PT pumps, you know, and socks, and extra shirt, and overalls, and the necessary needles, and all that kind of carry on. You know, lather brush, toothbrush, polish, the brushes, one for a boots. Not forgetting the gas mask, steel armour, and Glengarry. I'll tell you what though, our eyes went misty when we saw our flag flying for the first time. And we looked at it. Thank God for that, you know. There it was. After the ship. Flying away, proud as much. Not up. After the French had boarded the ship, right, because they come with like 2,000 French. It was at night time. Of course, nobody thought about sleeping or anything like that. There was the light showing outside on deck, on or anywhere like that. And, below decks, we got ready for having a kit, like, you know, one or two slugs from the monks that were showing how to. Others kicked down on the deck. We got palliasses and that, whoever wanted them. And they were quite good as well. And, matter of fact, I've got a hammock myself, and I got the post to be put up on it. You know, properly. Showed me how to take it down in the morning. So, we didn't know exactly about what involved on it, but we weren't bothered out of it. I thought it must be something, because it can't be any worse than what it's ever been before. And then they slapped a questionnaire in front of us to answer. I forget what they were now, just the run-of-the-mill question. And after that we got another paper to tick off which medals we thought we were entitled to. Well, nobody bothered about them either, to be honest. And then we started giving us our duties. He said, now come on, give. There were about eight, I think, so what, they were detailed to work with the Beauforts. That's the Beaufort ones we have. I was one was put on patrol around the boat, you know, around the deck side to see everything was okay. Another six of the lads were detailed to go towards the what they call them, depth charges. That's what they didn't to them, but. This was for the following morning to start right away as you said again. And the rest of them were told they were firemen. First aid and firemen. Now, the captain had asked the colonel who was in charge of the turnpike only at least. And then if there's any orders, understand them properly. But what surprised us was that seven Americans on the ship. It was a great big lad, you don't know. And the first time we'd ever known about this, right? Anyway, it turned out to be a decent sort of folks, and they helped us out with our patrol around the ship. Just come round. Okay, we got back, settled down for things. It was during the night time, first night time. Not forgetting. It just getting up to sleep after a little bit. It must have been about 2 or 4 days after about that time. Couldn't sleep properly then. So I listened to them again. We were all quite warm, like. There was this here. Big. Bloody hell, we've been told people. Anyway, they come out and said, no, we just dropped a couple of depth charges, which they did periodically, so we get used to it now, you know what they are. And then the, on the ships, what do you call it, loudspeaker, what do you call it, tunneling, wasn't it? I know, he said, now hear this. And then he said, we just dropped that charges. And we're going, I forget what knots we were then, all this stuff, the other crap we used to give out. He said, I hope they didn't make it jump too much. And the match was all right, you know. Anyway, that was the way we started our journey. I'm sorry, but I can't recall the exact date we boarded the ship. Well, I never was one for remembering dates, but I can say that it must have been the beginning of March, 1945. However, to go on. The lads buckled too, you know, and everyone who had to trained hard. So that the crew were very impressed. And the captain asked the colonel to pass his compliments on to the lads. Well done, he said, you know. And as you all know, what a little praise from higher up will do. They practiced with live ammo and enjoyed every minute. Then they set to and screamed the guns, and for good measure, you know, the twin Lewis guns on deck, he took them down and cleaned them and all, and you were allowed to fire them too. So, everything was going okay in that respect, but meanwhile, of course, the bosun got very friendly with me. Because, of course, what it was, I happened to catch a couple of Frenchmen. They were rafting in his cabin. Well, at the time, I was lucky I had a couple of Yanks with me. It came in quite handy, you know, because a few blows were exchanged, and it was soon all right. First of all, the two Frenchmen were getting to be treated in the sick bay, you know, got some bruises and that, and then they were put in lockup, believe me. No message. Now, what happened to them, I don't know. And I didn't ask, I wasn't interested. But the bosun told me to put my gear in his cabin, you know, the rest of the voyage. He said he would be, he would see me okay. I thought it was a bit queer, this, I mean. I asked him straight out, are you a bit, you know? He replied, no sir, and neither is any one of my crew. So, be at ease. We've no golden rivets on this ship, he said. Well, that were enough for me. The bosun had two bunks in his cabin. There's one either side of his doorway. Now, I reckon that it used to be a tourist cabin anyway before it was taken over as a troop ship, you see. And so I moved in and I found out that the boss read the Bible every night for about an hour. Of course, I never interfered with his private life, his private times. And I cleaned the cabin every day. After me very well, I must admit that he did that. Now, you know, the ship, all ships have stores, but apart from the normal stores, there was like a little type of cabin or so with a hatches on, you know. On the ship's door, don't they? This was the end where it was called, you know, the if you will, the naffy, the shop part, where people could go and buy something. Now, as you know, Montgomery had decreed that there'd be no alcohol sold on board to the troops during wartime. I don't know whether it applies to the Navy or not, but there was none on board ship as far as they could ascertain, not for the troops anyway. Now, these here doors we're talking about 3 foot each. in with. And they were open for an hour each morning, an hour in the afternoon, and then half an hour at night, evening time, you know, just for comfort to go, such as, rising material, tobacco, sweets, toddlers and biscuits, and stuff like cans of pop. Now, this year ban on alcohol didn't stop the bosun from giving me a bottle of Guinness every night, I got. And strawberries and ice cream. He just brought them in the cabin, said, "Now put them down," and said, "There you go, help yourself." And they went out again. As I said before, we respected each other's privacy. Other's privacy. And that's how he stayed the whole voyage, believe me. The sea was calm. The whole of the voyage. There was nothing that needed to be battened down or anything at all. Now, I was put in charge of the queue that formed up for the canteen shop, like this here shop, this here another place. Now, sometimes it was chaos because remember that we had the French on board. And they didn't want to understand etiquette or manners or standing in line. They just gathered round, you know, pushed each other apart and who could get there first, like. And so, what happened was that myself and them times, there were the three things. We all had these pickaxe handles, you know. And we just need to threaten somebody, and off they'd go. Back at queue. That do it. Anybody that was out of order, back at queue, right away. Now, he'd often flare up his trouble in them queues because the people, the Yanks, were getting a bit. They were getting brown enough with having to wait one thing or another. And of course, if somebody came along to me with a ticket, a chitty, that said mess hall duties or cream evolution or something of that nature, it had to be signed. And I knew the signatures, so they couldn't fiddle them. Now, they handed this to me, and I helped to the front of the queue so that they could go get back to their job, you see. The others, they had to wait in line. And as I said before, anybody getting on really were clobbered and sent back to the back of the queue. That meant, of course, that they probably wouldn't get anything at all because the shutters were put up right on time. They were open right on time, and they were put up right on time. They hadn't to wait a minute before, and it was no use waiting a minute after. So that was the exact time. It was very strictly adhered to, believe me. I remember on one particular occasion, the French were grumbling about the British always being in front line first, and they forgot that everyone that came to the front had chitties, even though our lads had chitties, to prove that they had jobs to go to. The French who worked as well also got served like they did their dining hall duties and for their own, you know, and evolutions and that. But they couldn't all be employed right enough. Well, the captain got wind of this and he put a stop to this bickering easily. He just said, "Right, 20 minutes for the Britons, there's only a few of them, and the rest of the time is for the Frenchmen to get there what they want. And don't serve any British once the French have started being served." So that was that. And that had to be adhered to, and it was. Mind you, they still grumbled, you know. And one night, you know, as I was patrolling the deck with had pumps and shirt on and had the pickaxe handle on loosely in my, you know. And suddenly 8 or 9 Frenchmen came at me. Oh, God, I backed off and I used a baton. I clobbered a couple high and then I was kicked in the guts. Of course, I dropped to my knees. Then up came the 7th Cavalry, believe me, and they didn't die wearing Denise Froggies, I'll tell you. 4 yanks. They were just waiting for something like that. They knew something was going to happen. I didn't. I never could have thought. But they seemed to know anyway, and they were right on cue. And of course, the Froggies tried to scarper her, but it was useless, you know, because coming the opposite way where they were going, the ball from the Marlin spike in his hand, and 3 more of the crew, honestly, I was hurting, but my word, I laughed at that. I thought, yeah, that's a bloody good do, you know. I thought, now they're going to get something. But they were locked up and all. I didn't see them again either. Well, you know, all right. I mean, you see, I can stand a Frenchman for what he is and what he does and one thing and another. Provided they're nice with me, we'll be nice with them. But they weren't. Were very, very objectionable to us. I don't know why, whether they were jealous of us or what, I don't know. But they wouldn't clean their billets even, you know, where they spent the deck room and all that. And the bosun warned them. He said, I'll turn the old spy upon you buggers if you don't get it cleaned up. Well, one or two did this, but the rest said, well, they weren't soldiers anymore anyway, and so they refused to take orders. Well, that was it. The whole spike was turned on. And everything got sopping wet through in their place, I understand. That night, most of them slept in the open, but they were watched very carefully. They weren't allowed to smoke a lighter or anything at all, you know. If they wanted to smoke, they'd go down into the, you know, down below into the decks. And that's how it was there. Of course, as the days went on, it became warmer, and we dropped anchor for a while, about maybe 4 or 5 hours in Istanbul. Now, don't ask me what we took on board, and oh, I couldn't tell you, I couldn't see properly. But looking over Istanbul, you can see the record down singing when you're in the harbour there. There were spires and towers and all kinds of them. I couldn't raise up. I know it. It looked a hodgepodge of roofs and things like that. I couldn't make it out. And I was really glad to go away from it, I'll tell you. The weather was warm and sunny while we were sailing through the Medi. And the French got settled down eventually. And of course, most of them on board someday. We came to the RCRC and there was a sergeant tried to get us to do exercises. You know, we told him we'd done all the exercises we were going to do back there in Poland. No, we wanted a break. The colonel, he came along, he must have been 42, and said that as long as we did our allotted duties, we could do as we please, provided we didn't get into the crew's way. And that's all he asked. So that was that. We sailed on and on until we sighted Malta. It was tricky getting into the harbour though. There were wrecks up and down, one thing and another, I don't know. Anyway, we managed it, right? Obviously. But, then the colonel who was in charge of us come round, got us together and said, there's been a change of plan. I was we the British were to transfer to the troop ship Orion, moored just across the harbour from us. And the Duchess would carry on to somewhere on the French coast, the Frenchman. Well, that didn't suit him. But orders were orders. Anyway, two tenders were sent for us and took us over to the Orion. As we were just getting on board, there were a few officers waiting. So the first thing we got was a right castigation for not saluting. Oh, we hadn't saluted an officer for ages. Got to be me. So I remarked that saluting was a two-way system. So what about the return salute then? Well, it didn't go down very well either, what I said. Anyway, they walked away. But the captain, well, I'd never seen him before, came up to me and said, well, Sonny, well said. But don't worry. They'll soon get to know which end of a gun to fire from. It's the first time out, you know this. And they're going back home for leave and then into Europe. They came here when the action was over, not while it was on. And then he asked us where we were from. So we told him. And as he took us to leave, he said, oh, look, there's one who's come up from the ranks. I've a bit of advice for you. Yes, sir, we said. He answered, don't let the bastards grind you down. So long, lads, and good luck. We said, thank you, Captain. Then we saluted him. He turned it, smiled, and walked off. The crew of the Rochester Bedford, by the way, were not pleased when they knew what was going down, but like us, they had to accept it. And before we left them, they gave every one of us lads 200 pegs apiece and thanked us for a good voyage and the help we gave them. Now, as I said, we already boarded this Orion like, and we were assembled on one of the lower decks and given sleeping space, and Polly asked and told to be ready for medical inspection. And one thing or another, well, when this was over, we were given a lecture by a major about returning to the forces and to respect senior ranks. We agreed with this. But when the major who gave the lecture asked, are there any questions? All the lads asked, is it right that we should have received a bollocking as soon as we stepped onto the ship? He scratched his head. Well, I think it was a misunderstanding, he said. But don't worry, I'll sort it out. Then he said that he hoped that we had a pleasant trip and we would soon be home. And he saluted. We returned his salute and he left. I don't know what time of day it was or anything the other day when we left Malta, but like we did. Our little group didn't bother wandering about the ship, you know, or looking here and there, or meeting many people. We weren't bothered about that. But we were a little crestfallen about leaving the Duchess. Anyway, we got some playing cards, and first of all, four of us started playing pond, and wow, anybody going over a pound, losing a pound, dropped out. Some bugger else joined in then, you see. But I just about told me only fire. I cannot quite remember rightly, but I think I generally did things like that that weren't too bad. In any case, are a bit careful. Now, Excuse me. What we're playing like in this year particular, on this year, well, you can call it a room if you want. Well, we're given a big jug of lime juice and said, now, you can drink as much of this when you like, and as much as you like. And when that's gone and you want some more, there's plenty more where that came from. Was it right, well, it was warm, admitted, but it didn't bother us. We wondered exactly, first of all, until we got this far. And then a swaddy was coming through, I don't know what regiment he was from. Anyway, I couldn't tell it because he only had his shirt on and his trousers pumped. Oh, he said, that's to get you, he said, from, keep you from feeling amorous and things like that, he said. You know what he said? This is what they give us. He said, you'll find it quite alright though. Decent enough to soap. I said, aye, okay, right there. And off he went, you see. Now, we were told that we had to go to the, we had two messes every meal time, the first mess and then the second. We were on the second, always on the second. And first time we entered the dining room, you know, we had our legs pulled about this year, saluting job. But it was soon dealt with, believe me. And we got on pretty well with the lads from the different regiments. And, you know, things went okay. Now, what can I say to you about that? I don't know exactly. No, I can't remember anyway. As I say, I haven't that good of a memory for regiment dates or times or anything like that. The names I just won't drop because, well, very few because I love that. I don't think it's right. But, you know, there are odds and sods. I reckon the most of them are going on leave. You know, from Malta back to Britain. And I think about this year, the Orion, to me, the food wasn't a patch on the food we had on the Duchess. Matter of fact, it was nearly all, nearly mostly fish. And the, what do you call that walkie, that speaker? That system anyway, what's it called again? Tannoy system. That kept working over time, and oh, bloody hell, what a nuisance that was. Sometimes we'd just be dozing off and we'd be sparking something out or other. Bit of news or something, I don't know. Anyway, we weren't bothered about it. We did get used to it eventually. You know, it would be now, hear this and hear this. Attention, attention. And you know, then they'd start talking about what they had to talk about. I'll tell you one thing I noticed on board that ship, the boat drill was a bloody shambles. It was a shambles. Half at May West were missing. And everybody kept getting in each other's way. Our group as well. We used to get in other people's way, they got in our way. Oh God, we know the hell we were. I tell you, I'm glad that there wasn't an emergency on that voyage. Good grief. There would have been a bit of a disaster, I think. Anyway, one morning we woke up and, as usual, attended to our ablutions, etc. You know, washing, shaving, and all that, like yourself, respectable, presentable. And then this was in, just there, a bit dirt then. Anyway, it's daylight. We saw land. We sighted land, you know, at first in the distance, and as we got nearer to it, the world went round. Well, this is Scotland, like, you know. Oh, we didn't know the hell we were or anything. We knew we were excited land lang, so we were very excited about it, kept looking. But we still long towards, oh yeah, God love it. Excitement started mounting up in us, when we're gonna get back now anytime, this is gonna be good, you know. And then out of the loo, the ship stopped. And on the bloody tannoy came the deadly words. Now hear this. Now hear this. Not one single person will leave this ship as yet. A quarantine flag has been hoisted. The Port of Glasgow Health Authority has been alerted because we have a case of suspected smallpox on board. Doctors and nurses will board the ships tomorrow morning. That meant over there. God, wow. Our hearts dropped again, of course, you know. In the meantime, in the meantime, this here boy said, he said, no, please have a little patience. And he said, especially you ex-prisoners of war. We sympathize with you, but hope it won't be for long. Can't afford to take smallpox into Glasgow, as you must appreciate. So please, be patient. That is all. Of course, we stopped, you see. But an hour later, we looked out to see a small number of boats. Oh, but they were surrounding the ship at a distance, and they remained stationed. Pardon me. And they remained on station right through the night, all the morning, until the boats arrived with the necessary medical personnel, you know, on board. Pull up alongside and boarded the ship, and then of course it was line up for vaccination, everyone. From the captain right down to the last passenger on board ship. Well, that took nearly all day. Then the ship was allowed to proceed up the Glyde and into George the Fifth dock. Glasgow at last. We had made it. As you can imagine, this embarkation did not take long. Now, we were taken from the ship directly onto a waiting train, passenger train. This time it was not cattle trucks, decent seats in railway carriages. Now, before we set off, there was the Women's Volunteer Service, or whatever they called, WVS anyway, with cups of tea and buns and cakes and meat pies and all this kind of paraphernalia, which they offered us through the windows of the carriage. Anyway, that was about, I would say, no more than half an hour. Don't forget that our little group were not the only ones on that train. The whole lot of the troops from the ship was on the train. Anyway, first stop, London, Euston. No stops in between, any description whatsoever. Straight through to London. On arrival at London, we were met by the MPs, military police, they had two 1500 weights waiting for us. We jumped in the back with our bits of luggage, which we had kit bags. We got kit bags, but I never mentioned that, did I? But we all had kit bag apiece. And before we left the ship, they were all marked with white, what do you call it, chalk, you know, customs had been on board. Anything to declare, oh, you're all right. You were from, oh yes, you're the ex-prisoner, are you right? Or, you're all right, off you go. Just marked our bags, and this was it. Now, as we got to London, we're taken, as I say, to some, I don't know where the devil it was in London. Things moved that fast. But we were ushered into this room. We were documented. We were given new AB-64s. We were given, I forget how much money we got, but we got quite a considerable amount. And asked where we were going home. We were given the appropriate railway warrant and informed that at a later date we would be informed where to report, but not for a week or two. Now, we were also told that to report the following day to the town doctor, who would be expecting us, and report every day until told to do otherwise in our own hometowns. Well, I was on my way to Preston. There were two or three more in the same railway compartment as I was. They were going, I don't know, Chorley, Leyland, roundabout anyway. There was just about three or four of us in this compartment. And, by the way, we were ferried back to Euston Station. Now, I must admit here, I did forget to mention that we then got, from this documentation centre where we got our AB-64s, we got clothing coupons, sweet coupons, and, oh, I don't know, all kinds of coupons and things. They were for rations, which we would be able to have while we were on leave. Anyway. I didn't know what the devil they were doing with us. But I thought, right, all right, okay, yeah, right, right. All we were interested in was getting back on that train on the way back, you see. Now, we got to this particular train which we had to catch, and we were escorted by MPs to a big lads, they were MP red caps. I opened the carriage door, looked up and down, couldn't find an empty carriage right. There were five or six people in one compartment. Out, come on, out, right away, the lot of you. We got them all out, put it in the compartment, to put on a reserve sign, and said, that's yours. You don't need to let anyone else in that now until you get back home. And that was it. Well, admitted, I think the train stopped at Rugby and Stafford, and I don't know, places like that. And then it got to Leyland, and he stopped at Leyland, Chorley, you know, or Chorley, I don't know, I forget which way it went around. Anyway, I got back to Preston. Oh, it would be, let me see now, what time would it be? Very, very late at night, anyway. And suddenly realised I went to stay with my aunt. I didn't know where the hell my mother was then, and I really wasn't bothered in a way, but I realised then, as I was saying, it was the 1st of April. 1st of April, 1945. I thought, dear me, has it taken us so long to get so far? And on, above all, April Fool's Day. Well, now I wonder whether I'm going to be a fool or not here. I hope not. Anyway, that's as it may be. I was welcomed in, and I stayed there for quite a while, and then through the post I got my marching orders, a railway warrant to go to a place called Otley in Yorkshire, and then from there to a type of camp where we were, what's the word we use for that? I forget what they use now, but it was a kind of assessment place where you had to fire your course, you had to do this, you had to do that, you had to try and put a broken lock together, and all kinds of stupid things. We did the maths, they gave us maths to do, and a little bit of English. Well, that was nothing to me, piece of cake, you know. But then, when we were assessed, I was shocked to find out that I was transferred to the RAOC, go to headquarters, Donington.